everybody. Welcome to another edition of RZ Weekly. We are back for our summer episode because so much is going on. We felt we just couldn't take off the entire summer. I'm here with Harav Johnny Solomon. Hello, Harav Johnny Solomon.
Hi there.
Oh, the dulcet tones. I miss them so much. And Harav Nimali Biravsky. How are you, Harav Nimali Biravsky?
Hanging in there.
Hanging in there. Well, more than hanging in there, we must take this opportunity to wish you a mazal tov on the wedding of your daughter. Mazal tov.
Thank you.
Mazal tov.
Yeah, it was beautiful and lovely.
You. Thank you.
Has
for
that kept
being
you busy?
There,
have you?
Especially Johnny for schlepping out.
It was a pleasure.
Really appreciate that.
It's all good.
Ah, yeah.
Johnny, I mean, because Johnny had to schlep out and leave. You know what I'm saying? Like, Johnny had other obligations that night.
He didn't even get the delicious grilled
or the dinosaur dance.
Although I have to say, in that location, you're like, seriously, you're looking over Hare Yerushalayim. It's like ridiculous. It was so beautiful. Oh, it was so great. Anyway, great joy. How are the Sheva Brachot, Molly? Anything to tell us about the Sheva Brachot? We're going to do actually a different format, not one long topic. We're going to talk about three different topics. So that'll be Molly's lead into how are the Sheva Brachot? What's going on? Got anything to share?
So obviously, that was a leading question. The Sheva Brachot were absolutely beautiful, wonderful, lovely family. Mamash, a pleasure. Was really lovely. It was at the side of the Chatan. However, I want to say that we were talking before, and something that's been on my mind kind of exploded as it does when I get, emotionally. What's the word? I don't want to use the word triggered, but. Whatever. Okay, here we go. So basically, the Sheva Brachot in this series of a lot of other things are making me feel a certain feeling that's kind of relevant to RZ Weekly, which is the lighter word would be dilemma. The stronger word, which I think I'm experiencing right now, is even the word pain of the American Olé. Because here's the situation that I'm in. Okay, okay, so I guess I'll start with the Sheva Brachot and you'll keep understanding what's going on. So, but just to give a little bit of context, I have two sons now in active service. My younger one just had his Tekesh Hashba'ah. He's in Givati. He's in basic training right now, but that's going to be finished in the next few coming months. Givati are the ones who fight in Aza, so obviously you can imagine the state of my anticipation. And I have another son who you all kind of have been following who was in Miluim until February in Chan Yunis, pretty heavy stuff. And we were just told that his Miluim, which was supposed to start after the Chagim, have been moved up. So he will be in all of August and all of September. And again, this is the larger issue that of Israeli society, that A, it had to be moved up. Also, my other son had to start earlier than he was supposed to. And it had to be extended. It was supposed to be 1 month after the Chagim. Instead, it's 2 months, August and September, which created a lot of drama and dilemma for me because I really want to go to America and see my father and spend time with my father, who's by himself in America. I mean, some relatives. And August is the perfect time for a teacher to do that, but I can't now because my son's going to be in Miluim. So all of this is to say that I'm under tremendous, tremendous stress. My entire, everything has been upended, not to mention, the war is really taking a toll. And it's for some people, it's sort of not in their consciousness. For many of us, it very much is. And last week we lost 12 soldiers. Like that's an incomprehensible number. But all of that is an introduction to, so here I am, right? Like giving my heart and soul and willing to put everything that matters to me on the line for this country. And then there's this niggling little issue that I'm an Olé in this country, which means that when I go for Shabbat Sheva Brachot in Netivot, which was wonderful and the family was wonderful, I feel like this is going to maybe be an exaggeration, but sort of half a person because I actually have very good Hebrew. I'm fluent in Hebrew. I work with Israelis. I WhatsApp in Hebrew, but there's always going to be a gap. And so that Shabbos, I felt like completely, like the alien from another planet. And I didn't feel like I had a full voice. And again, this is not anything about the family or the community. It was just the reality. And it contrasted with then that following Sunday, I was at at an event in Beit Shemesh, and all of a sudden, I'm like, oh, I'm a person. I have connections. I know people. There are people the same way in this, you know, Nitzivot, they all know each other for the past 30, 40 years. Here I am in Beit Shemesh with all my friends from college, and, you know, the rabbi is speaking in a Hebrew, but everybody else, there's English. Like, I'm a human. I'm a person. And my person has been given back to me. So I had that experience. And then I had the Tekes Hashpa'ah of my son. And I'm being shoved. And again, it's so beautiful. I'm at the Kotel, and some people even saw the video, and it's so moving. Givati's Tekes Hashpa'ah. But I'm being smushed and pushed by Israelis. I don't have my voice to say to them, which I would say in English, and I don't have the cultural nuances to know how to say something that's going to go over appropriately. I don't know how to say, I got here an hour early, and I've been sitting here, and you guys are smushing and pushing and stepping over me, and please stop it, and I'm part of your culture just as much as you are, and I can't, and I feel like I'm just this, like, loser, old American mom. You know, there's like a line in The Office where Pam goes, I used to be young and cute, and now I'm just a fat mom. That's what I felt like in that moment. And then I'm watching the, like, you know, adorable little 18-year-old flirting with the chayal so she can, like, get through the barricades and take pictures of either it's her boyfriend or it's her brother or it's her who knows. Because, and it's, again, it's not about language. It's about cultural nuances and understanding how you smile. Like, I get sitting there for an hour, and then my neighbor, all of a sudden she's standing next to me. And I'm like, how the heck did you do that? With a smile and a shove. She knows how to do it. She knows how to find that Israeli, like, mixture of aggression, but we all love each other, so we don't have to get angry, but I'm going to get what I want. And there I am feeling totally like a loser, totally embarrassed because I get upset when somebody steps on me and I'm the one who raises my voice. But, like, my Israeli neighbor is, like, kibitzing with the lady next to her and, oh, and mashlam chabecha. And I'm embarrassed, like, oh, I lost my temper or whatever it was. But she's standing next to me, and she showed up an hour and a half after me. And the bottom line is, she will be part of this culture. She will be understood. She will be seen. She will be able to function in a way that I never will. And it's generally annoying. But when I'm in a state where, like, I'm feeling like again, I'm giving so much, it's reached a point of pain. So I'm going to be the voice of all the Olim, and the first thing I'm going to say to anybody who wants to make Aliyah is, you know, this whole thing about acclimate, integrate, at this point, Ruby and Johnny, and I like to hear your point, I'm like, just move to Beit Shemesh, people. Just move to an American community and be comfortable. Yes, your kids have to acclimate, but I have had it. I have had it up to here with not being able to be my full self. I'm done. And again, I'm a person with good Hebrew, good social skills, good empathy. Like, I should be the person. Like, if anybody should be able to do it, it should be me. And I'm still struggling. So, yes, have your kids integrate. But, people, this is really hard. Soapbox done.
Wow. Yeah. Well, okay. I would like to go first, Johnny. Is that okay if I respond first? Because Molly said something. First of all, Molly, I want to thank you for sharing that. I really, like, sometimes a lot of us are afraid to say what we're thinking. And I'm sure there are no small amount of Olim among our many thousands of listeners who are listening to this thinking, I feel that in some way or another. And I think that we all feel that in some way or another. I'm not sure how much it should be therapy or how much we want to respond. I know for definitely all of us feel in some way outsiders. And you're right to some degree. No matter what you do, like, I was born in America. Like, I had this conversation with, I don't remember who, really recently, like with a kid who was, interestingly, he was born in Israel, but his parents are American. And, like, our kids even assimilate some of that culture because of how they're raised in their household and values. And we are who we are. And I think there's anything to be ashamed of or to be upset about. That's just the nature of the thing. Secondly, without a doubt, to me, I'll play armchair therapist. Obviously, the anxiousness and the pain you're feeling about your kids and the war that we're all feeling heighten these things. You know what I'm saying? Here we are. I came an hour early. Why would you get an hour early to get a spot? You know that means nothing in Israel. Spots mean nothing in Israel. No such thing as dibs. It doesn't matter. You just push your way up like everybody else. But for whatever reason, you know, for all of these reasons and the pain that we're all feeling, and you're right, the war is taking a terrible toll. I generally don't feel it as much as you do. I don't internalize it. Last week, Yakir Teitelbaum, who was the children of I forget his name, Mayor Marcy Teitelbaum, who were members of my shul in Detroit, was killed in Gaza. And it just, it, my whole week was off. I was snapping, I was terrible, and it was just, I just couldn't focus. And we went and paid a Shiva call, and it was just terrible. And I think we're all feeling that, and it's exhausting, and there's no end in sight. And this is the situation of being living in Eretz Yisrael today. We have to fight for our existence. And it takes its toll, and it affects us in ways that we don't expect. And things that normally don't bother us, they bother us, and we feel them more strongly. And I think we have to be aware of that. At the same time, I want to respond in two ways. The same time, first of all, yes, it's a function of being an Olé. We are going to not get everything, but I have felt for a long time that we are a culture. Israel is a country of Olim, meaning if you're feeling that, and we Anglos are feeling that. Many, many hundreds of thousands, not millions of Israelis are feeling that. Everyone feels othered at times. That's just the nature of the country. It's the nature of the culture. And so somebody came from Latin America or Russia or whatever. And I'm sure even natural Sabras feel that when they come to Beit Shemesh or Alon Shavuot and they feel out of place. It's just the nature of the country. And I think that we sometimes tend to emphasize it more than other people do, more than Israelis do. And, you know, if you're going to, when in Rome, if you're going to be at the Tekes, rather than saying, oh, I'll never fit in, you know, like, you have to learn to try to fit in and push your way in and smile. And if they frown at you, welcome to Israel. They frown at you. That's the nature of the thing. Who cares? And the final thing I really wonder, interestingly, is maybe you're Anglo because, and you'll tell me if this is true or not, Alon Shavuot is pretty Anglo. I mean, there are obviously Israelis there also, but we tend to, you know, we live in our little bubbles. And I think that we all are guilty of this in some way. And I wonder how much of an effect that has. That's the final question. I will just leave it as this. So a lot of people listening who are thinking of making Aliyah will be saying, well, why should I move to Israel? You know, because I'm just going to feel like an outsider all the time. And the answer is, yes, my answer would be, you're going to feel like an outsider. That's a price you pay, but a tiny price to pay for the opportunity to be on the front lines, literally and figuratively, of the future of the Jewish people. So, you know, what can you do? We have to be, somebody said it to me before we made Aliyah, Shlichin, they said, yes, you have to be makriv for the sake of your children and for the sake of the future generations. And I thank you, Molly, for sharing. And that pain is very real. I think it's heightened because of the crazy situation that we're in. And at the same time, okay, you learn to live with it. You're a little bit different. And sometimes I davka emphasize my Americanness to Israelis. Because A, I know that sometimes they're a teeny bit jealous of your Americanness, they're jealous of your English, and they're jealous that you get nuances in American culture that they don't get. And to learn to appreciate that, while that might be a chisaron, that's sometimes also a benefit as well. So before you respond, I'm going to send it to Johnny. We're doing these short takes, and then we'll move on. Johnny, what do you think?
Okay, so there's a lot being said, and I'll try and respond. I've got a few points I want to cover, and I'll try and do it quickly. I'll tell you a quick story. When I was 19 years old, I was madrich who took a bunch of students to Gateshead. I won't bore you as to why the context. It's a great thing to take Jews to visit different communities. But I'd been in the Lumi Yeshiva going to Gateshead. It's a Haredi Yeshiva. And I remember momentarily sitting in the base madrich thinking, maybe I'm out of place. And then I kind of gave myself a slap in the face and I said, Torah's yours, right? As much as anybody else in this room. And therefore, nobody's judging you, by the way. The people there were lovely. But I made a promise to myself, I will never feel out of place in a Beis Medrash because a Torah is no less mine than somebody else's. I say that because this is the second point, and I wrote about this a couple of months ago in response to a piece by David Bashevkin. I'm Israeli by choice, and that's a really important thing. You know, a person can be a Jew by choice, I'm Israeli by choice. And how I choose to express that Israeliness, my capabilities of doing so, perhaps differ from context to context. But in the same way that I said the Torah is as much mine as somebody else's, Israel is as much mine as somebody else's. And so, sure, there are moments where I don't quite have the nuance and language. Sure, that happens quite regularly. Your Hebrew is, you know, meaningfully better than mine. I can hold my own, certainly, but you've been a little bit longer than me. But Israeli by choice means I will never let that get me down, even though those moments happen. I'll tell you a quick story. We were in Efrat for Shabbat. My daughter's finishing up her 2 years of Shirut Lumi. And we stayed with a family we didn't know, amazing family. And we went to have meals with Israeli families my daughter has eaten at for the past couple of years. And we were talking with one family, you may know them, Ofun Gadi Permata, and we were having Kiddush with them. My daughter lives opposite them, and they were saying Meir has been a wonderful, etc. They had no idea she was originally Anglo, nor did another family we ate with, Chovava Navia Reichner. And that's a wonderful thing. I've gifted my daughter the ability to be mamash dusfatin, every dimension of the word, that people wouldn't know her context, and she can hold her own perfectly. But I was speaking to Gadi, and he says, you know, you guys making Aliyah is an amazing thing. I said to him, listen, it's very nice of you, but we're in a war. You know what's amazing? Our chayalim. What's amazing is the strength of Jewish people. And then, this is a person I'd only met 20 minutes beforehand. He welled up. He said, you need to know what you did is an amazing thing. And sometimes we need to remind ourselves that choice to leave a country where things were completely comfortable, to come to a country where things aren't always comfortable, and do so by choice, and sometimes put our kids on the front line, and do so holding our head held high, is worthy of us saying to ourselves, if I'm getting up every morning, I'm fighting a good fight, I'm doing a good job, then that's a wonderful thing. Now, just later on that same day in Efrat, I gave two shirim to people in Zayir Anan, one in Hebrew, one in English. The fact is, I have a bonus. I'm actually Dusfati. I speak two languages. Most people only get to speak one shir in one language. I'm able to speak to two different communities. And I'd say, although I'm not Israeli by birth, I am Israeli by choice, and I do live Israeli culture, even with the language challenges. And so I see I'm having my cake and eat it, and that's a fabulous thing. I'll say one final thing, and then I'll wrap up, which is, you know, the beginning of the war, I did quite a lot of shiva calls. As Mali said, last week was brutal. We lost 12 beautiful, holy, brave soldiers. And the past few weeks, I've actually taken a step back. It's just been, either I need to be able to wake up in the morning and get on with the things I need to do, or I need to carry the pain of other people. And sometimes you need to know what your capabilities are. And I said to myself, right now, I need to reduce one thing in order to achieve other things. Maybe that's a sign of weakness. Maybe it's just a reality check. But it's been a long, brutal war, and a lot of us are carrying physical strains, or everybody's carrying emotional strains. And giving yourself permission to say, today doesn't need to be the day that you walk straight into more searing pain that other people are carrying, is okay. And I've said that to myself in the past few weeks, and things will change, I'm sure. But I think it's important to know that, like Ruby said, you know, going to these heartbreaking shivers, one should, if you can. But if you can't, it's okay. So those are my thoughts.
Molly, yeah. Any response?
First of all, thank you. I want to respond briefly. So first of all, I also want to add, I guess I'll say a couple things. First of all, just Ruby, your question about like where we choose to live made me remember that the truth is that I know what I really think about this issue, which is I had a very interesting conversation with somebody who their job was in the army to help chayalim acclimate, and that was also a really good point that we're all Olim. And they had done studies about how to help immigrants acclimate from a country of origin into a new country. And they said, you can take one of four attitudes. Obviously, an unhealthy attitude is to say, my past country was amazing and I hate this country, right? That is a really bad, like, you're not going to integrate well, you're going to be miserable, right? Okay. It's also really bad to say, my past country was terrible, right? Let's say somebody comes from a country of persecution, but I also hate this country. You're still going to be miserable, right? Surprisingly, yeah. Though, you know what also is not the most healthy way? It's also not so healthy to say that country was terrible and this country is great, right? Schmutz Laretz, America's horrible. I'm so glad I got out of there. And Israel is awesome. That's not healthy either because you're cutting off your roots. What is healthy, this is what the study showed, is to have a positive attitude towards your past country and your future country, which is kind of what you're both are saying, right? It's like, there's so many wonderful things that I took from America and that I'm taking from America. And there are so many wonderful things that I'm an Israeli by choice, as Johnny is saying. And I think that really has been my guiding light, right? Which is why it's like, it's not like you must, no, don't live in Alon Shvot, go live in, you know, Merchavam and only speak Hebrew. No, that's terrible, this is great. I think finding a way to be, and also not, I agree with you, there is a disadvantage of a complete bubble. That this place is terrible, that place was awesome, and therefore I'm going to ignore kind of the fact that I'm living in this current country. But to find a way to take the best out of both worlds. So that's one response, and I agree with you. Also, what Johnny just said also reminded me when I once went to heard a speech to a therapist about raising our children bilingual, and she's like, listen, I'm just going to tell you the honest truth. Your children are going to be 80% Hebrew speakers and 80% English speakers. Like, and you know, I'm sure you guys know it with your kids, right? Like, their English is not exactly, you know, eloquent. And maybe some of them maybe, I don't know about my kids or your kids.
I actually think that's a function of what's
right,
read.
That's also a question, right? My kids all read in Hebrew. And I remember thinking of this, the Reb Lichtenstein story. He said,
interesting. My kids started getting them to read in English.
Right. So Reb Lichtenstein, when he said, when I made Aliyah, I thought to myself, Milton Matehala. Right? Mati Elav. And then he said, okay.
Yeah. I never
so he's
had
like,
that.
I'll sacrifice Milton. So I was like, you know, all my wonderful English books, but I was like, better they read Hebrew, better they read Harry Potter in Hebrew, and become fluent in Hebrew. And that was a choice I made because of that dynamic. But anyway, the point is, she's like, but isn't 80-80 better than 100-0? And it is. And that's kind of what Johnny's reminding me of. And so...
That's what we have a saying in our house, 80 is Grady.
Exactly. And here you're giving them. I like that. 80 is Grady. I also just read something. I said, we're all 80% humans. Like, don't expect yourself to be more than an 80% human being. So, like, just give yourself a break. But the point is that I do find that very comforting. And I guess I'll just end with, like, I guess, like, I'm in the middle of this right now because, as I shared with you guys before, my son's in the Army. The Army's being the Army. He needs medical care. He has an infection. Doesn't matter what it is. Doesn't matter what the story is. But I don't know. It's like the Israelis know exactly how much pressure to put, who to contact, how to contact, how to say it, how not to be the overbearing parent, how to get, and we don't know what the heck we're doing. And it's...
Right, especially the Army. Especially
so, like, it's hard. It's hard. So, on the other hand, you know, I call my older son. I'm like, you know, you're Israeli and you've done the Army, you know, so, you know, you use the...
Yeah, but he's not an Israeli mother.
Right, exactly. So he's giving me the advice. He's like, but you have to make the phone call. You're the Ima, you know, or like David or somebody. but it's... That it's I'm just everything. Everybody, you guys have, you know, nicham tani. Like, you made me feel better, but I am kind of just putting out there the pain of, like, all those little moments of just feeling like, you know what? It's like, again, I'll give another silly pop culture reference. There's a line on Modern Family where Sofia Vergara, right, who's Latina, right? So she's like trying, she's like, do you, and she, they make fun of her accent, she makes funny mistakes with her English. You guys have no idea how smart I am in Spanish, right? That's what she says. And it's a great scene. And so just that feeling, as you said, that, like, all of your immigrants have, we all have, and it's, and as you both said, it's especially exacerbated when it's not just a question of our ego, but when it's a question of, like, situations where we think it's really important. Right, where we're like, I need to get my son. I need to that mifaket to make sure he's getting his antibiotics and he's seeing a doctor, and I need to make sure that happens. And it's hard. So that's my final thought.
I have to respond with three short points. First short point: I love this country. It's great, but this week I had a hankering for a real hot dog, and I can't find one. They're all made of turkey and chicken. Oh, come on. So if somebody here could get me a real hot dog, I hear they sell them in Beit Shemesh.
They don't have the buns, even if they have the hot dogs.
Yeah, right, the buns. Like you're going to get a roll, it's going to be like it doesn't, no, wrong. It's wrong. I'm sorry. Anyway, my second story is this. Johnny's laughing. Johnny doesn't understand hot dogs because he comes from Britain. I don't know, whatever the food is. Second story is a story that, like, I was feeling this pain very acutely when I first made Aliyah. And I remember I was driving to work, and I was like, I'm giving this shiur in Hilchot Shabbat in Hebrew to a michlala, to a college, and I was thinking, like, I'm having this imposter syndrome. And then the weather guy comes on. I remember this, like, I always tell this story. And the guy gets on the weather, and he's like, "Ach, shav mezag avir mi Vladimir, blah blah blah." And he gets on, and he goes, "Mezag avir yom tiemu nan chidki tad bayir," and with this thick Russian accent. And I was like, if that guy could give the weather in his thick Russian accent on Israel radio, I could teach Hilchot Shabbat, you know, in my Hebrew. And it was 100% true, because, like, you know, like, and that also makes you realize that sometimes it's us and not them. And the third story, I'll leave to another day. We'll take a short break and continue with another issue right after this. As an RZ Weekly listener, you probably know a family that would love Kita for their children. Kita is an online Jewish learning program that combines online lessons with a weekly Zoom, allowing middle school age students to enjoy meaningful Torah study. We now offer two tracks for different types of students. In the Chumash and Navi track, now in its fifth year, Kita provides real Jewish learning in Chumash and Navi. This year we're studying Bamidbar and Malachim. This is for children in grades 5 to 8 who can read Hebrew texts. New this year is the Jewish Foundations or Yesodot track. Many Jewish children cannot read Hebrew, and as their bar or bat mitzvah approaches, they lack basic Jewish knowledge. In this track, students learn the Jewish calendar, basic mitzvot, fundamental Jewish practices, and more. Baruch Hashem, we have grown in the last year and provided meaningful Torah learning to dozens of children around the world. Hopefully, families that you know or in your community will join them. To learn more, visit kitah.org. That's kitah.org. Okay, we're back. And Johnny, you wanted to bring up something related to the summer. So your turn, go ahead.
Well, summer started in Israel. We had the Chofesh HaGadol, the big break, which lasts almost 2 months. Elul is also late this year. And that means if you're blessed to have kids, kids are at home. We don't have the summer camp culture that we have in North America. And so there's no obvious thing to do with kids for that long period of time. So what do parents often do? There are ketanot, there are little local programs, and often people try and get away. They often go to the north of Israel or internationally. Well, as we know, the north of Israel is a place which is not so easy to get to right now, not necessarily so advisable to get to, and our hearts are with those many, many families who aren't in their homes, let alone we can't go and live in their tzimmers for a weekend or something like that. So there's areas of Israel where many Israelis would go to that now are not able to be reached. But so what are other people doing? Some people are having staycations, some people are going away, and some people are figuring it out. But you're kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place. People need a break. Now, that doesn't mean everyone's going to get a break. There are people involved in fighting, people with kids in the army we were mentioning before, where a break is a nice idea in theory. It's not a reality. There are also people with young kids, they just need to take them somewhere else because they've also had an incredibly difficult time. And so you have this strange situation where every Israeli who's feeling the pain and difficulty of what's going on asks themselves, how am I going to use this Chofesh HaGadol? It's not a regular Chofesh HaGadol. We're still at war. We're still davening for the return of the Chatufim and our soldiers should come home safely. But it's also been a brutal 9 months where people have worked and done miluim and not had a break, and it's had massive impact on families. And if they can take a break, they definitely should. And so there are kind of guilty feelings by people taking a break, but they know they need to. There are frustrated feelings of people wanting to take a break, but they can't go locally because some of the options aren't necessarily available. We want tourists to come because the tour guides need the parnassah, but that often pushes up the prices of hotels, which some Israelis would like to stay in, and those who've been moved from the north or other way are also in some of those hotels. So this summer is a little bit hard if you're an average Israeli to know, what do I do with it which gives me the most that I need at this moment in time, which is financially reasonable. Of course, many people also have a lot less money because their salaries have been cut, many people have lost jobs or whatever. So these are questions of guilt for those who are going away, questions of frustration, people who are here, questions of I'm going to try and sort out my life in a time where the world is still yet to be ordered. You know, I mean, I don't come with any questions. So I don't come with any answers. I'm coming with the kind of questions which most of us are asking, feeling, and thinking, which is what do we do between now and the beginning of Elul, which is best for our physical health, mental health, which shows a sensitivity to what's going on, where we can be there for our friends, family who may need it, but where we're able to, you know, get through the summer and feel somewhat strengthened because we can't continue feeling like schmatters. That's kind
Johnny, what are you going to do? What did you decide?
So we spend about 3 months trying to figure out the few days where all my kids are free. We have 2.5 days, basically, the whole summer, where all my kids are free. But So often what I'll try and do is figure out, maybe go to Tim in the North. That's not possible. And then there are questions of, so what can we do? And obviously finances are limited because just they are. And so we're probably going to do some kind of staycation. I had a conversation with one of my daughters. She said, Daddy, let's not spend money staying somewhere. Let's just stay somewhere where it doesn't cost us money, but let's spend money just doing things together. I said, good tip. Let's do that. So we've kind of agreed for 2.5 days, maybe we'll try and see if we can go horse riding or go to a nice restaurant. But we just, building memories together is what families should be doing and can be doing if they're able to. And so that's kind of the default decision of the family. My job is to come up with the menu of options. But me, and I'm blessed to be able to even have that for 2.5 days. But there's now 2 months of keeping my other kids busy and excited, and other people with younger kids obviously have even greater struggles. So each person to their own situation.
Molly, what are you guys doing? I know you have you said you have army issues.
I'm feeling all the feelings that Johnny has, because I have the frustration that I can't go away when in August. We have to figure everything out in July, so we're also figuring it out actually. And we had the same guilt feelings, and a lot of people are like people are saying, like, I want to go on a family vacation, but like just low Bali to leave the country, or low Bali to go on vacation, or low Bali, any of those things. And I was feeling guilt also. We also found a week where everybody but the Chayal is available, so we're going to spend some time as a family. But that also stresses me out. I don't want to go anywhere very far, because I don't want to leave the Chayal for too long, especially now that I want to make sure that he's okay. But we're going to take a couple days.
But they don't have cell phone service at your Zimmer?
No, but whatever. Yeah, hopefully it'll be fine. that was another thing. We also have every year we do an extended, you know, like extended family vacation. It was supposed to be in the North. We're actually going away now for two nights with the extended family. It was supposed to be in the North. My very smart uncle, it wasn't even the North. It was like, you know, the Galil Elyon or something, made the executive decision to move it for my luck, more to the Merkaz, 40 minutes away from us. So we're going to have 2 nights in like a little Tzimmer, which is great, which we won't do anything, but we'll be together and hopefully there'll be a pool for the little kids and that'll be good. But like I dealt with all of the emotions that Johnny's talking about. And I want to add that I would say for our listeners, Americans, like, especially those of you on social media, just be sensitive. I'm so happy for you. I'm so happy that you had your day of bubbles at the public library and, you know, your beach day, blah, blah, blah. But like, just be aware that like Israelis, we're not in summer vacation mode. We're not. Which is exactly what Johnny said. And, you know, like, remember that. Just remember that. Doesn't mean every post has to be like, add with my memories of the people at war, but it's just like always when you have a little bit of sensitivity, I think it goes a long way. And I think, and it doesn't mean you can't post your day of bubbles, but then maybe at some point just reach out to some of your Israeli colleagues and say, or friends, and say how you're doing, and you know, what does your summer look like, and you know, the awareness that it's you know, for you everything's normal, for us everything is still not normal. So those are basically my thoughts. And again, August is going to be very hard for me because I'm going to be sitting in my house worrying every day. So I'm gearing up for that. That's going to be my August. But I don't mean to, you know, be a laid negativity on everybody. As Ruby said, like, that's the country. Everybody's giving and everybody's suffering and everybody's balancing and everybody's managing. And so I think that's the answer, is to just kind of all be sensitive to each other while, as Johnny said, giving ourselves permission to be kind and taking emotional space when we need it, and taking vacations, especially family vacations, when possible.
Right. So I was going to sort of like, obviously, it's, you know, I'm sorry you're going to have that time, and hopefully you'll be able to find some sense of balance and, you know, not too freaking out. I don't know what that means. You'll find some sense of equilibrium as we all struggle. But I actually take the sort of, I guess, contrary point of view, sort of echoing what Johnny said, in that, like, the reason our Chayalim are fighting is to allow the country to continue. And part of the country continuing is that people need to get away, and they need to have time, and they need to have family time, and they need to be happy. You know, like, if it's there's a Eitzara Yisrael, I remember vividly, I remember when we were in America somewhere on vacation, and one of the Lebanon wars broke out. I don't remember which year it was, 2000 and something, six or something like that. And we thought, should we go home? And we felt very guilty about it, and probably legitimately so. And we ended up not going home. But, the nature of this war, of this ongoing war, and it's a larger philosophical discussion, is that we're learning that it never really ended, and that the war is there, and it's going to be a protracted thing. It's going to just continue to, whether it's on a high heat or low heat. These aren't problems that are solvable per se, but they're going to be consistent. And if that's the case, then we have to learn to function personally, emotionally, but also professionally, and learn to find times to go away, to spend time with our families. You know, all of us have family in Chutz La'aretz. We're actually Dafka going to spend family time in Chutz La'aretz to celebrate a family birthday. And I didn't really feel guilty about going. You know, thank God I don't have like you Mali kids in the army. We would not go in that case. But I didn't feel like we're abandoning the country or we're doing anything wrong. I think that's our job. Our job is to support our soldiers and to pay our taxes and to support the people that are in pain and to reach out to them as much as we possibly can, but also to live our lives. And I guess that's part of the crazy, absurd balance that we have here. You know, like that on the one hand, there's a war going on and we're all still going to work. And there's a war going on, but if you visit Israel because you love Eretz Yisrael, you should still come and you should tour and you should spend money in the restaurants because that's what we need. We need you to come. We need you to be a part. We need you to be here. And the people, the tour guides need you to hire them to tour the places you can go see. And it's, perfectly safe. And it's a wonderful experience. And it's part of being with this is, I think, the new normal that the Jewish people are going to have to learn to live with. And I guess I sort of push back on you, Mali. I think, not every vacation is to Israel. And some people want to go to Italy and share their pictures. And I don't think that means that they're not thinking about us. I really don't. And I'm thinking of that way. I kind of enjoying, looking at people's vacation pictures and seeing the fun times that they have. I'm thinking, yeah, I probably want to go to Italy too. And maybe I will, one day with my wife. And that's okay too. I don't know. I think that we need to learn that this situation, people think the war is going to end. And even if it stops and there's a ceasefire, that's not an end. And then there's still the North and there's still Iran. And it's a crazy time. So we have to live our lives at a crazy time to find whatever normality, that's a comedy, it's not a real word, 80's grady, whatever normalcy we can find, all while understanding the crazy situation that we're in. That's my comment. Johnny.
I'll just say one quick thing. You may know that before October 7th, I started this thing of having like 52 coffees with people, often trying to give chizuk and discussing questions to do with education or business, whatever. And I stopped that, absolutely. I was never going to go to cafes and have coffees when we're in the middle of a war. But in the past couple of weeks, a couple of friends of mine, rabbis, educators, who've been carrying a tremendous load, have reached out to me saying, can we have a coffee? And I said, for sure, of course. And just last week, I met with two of them. And there are things we were talking through, really difficult, delicate things about things they've experienced and actually projects they're starting in order to help others. And, being there for families who've lost soldiers is important. Being there for soldiers is crucial. But there's lots of frontline people, not all necessarily wear uniforms, and many have carried a lot of tough things. And I didn't take any pictures of these conversations. They're not about the fun times. They're about just sitting privately with somebody in a corner of a cafe or somewhere or another and just giving each other a little bit more strength. And the fact that happened on more than one occasion just last week just reminded me, maybe in the summer I have just a little bit more time, that if people need to talk in that kind of way, just making time for that's okay. If your schedule allows for a little bit more flexibility, just going out for coffee with a friend and just schmoozing, that's a gift. It's a gift to them, it's a gift to yourself, and don't undersell that. And that was very, very evident from the conversations I had.
All right, two topics, very interesting, so much to think about. I want to thank Rabbi Mali Brabsky for joining us, Rabbi Johnny Solomon. We're thinking about you. We're probably not going to be back for a couple of weeks. It's the summer, everyone's got stuff. We hope you all are doing well. If you have comments, we'd love to hear your thoughts about our podcast. If you have topics you want us to talk about, we'd also love to hear your ideas. Please send them to us on the Facebook. You can reach each and every one of us. I thank my son for our music. Wishing you all a pleasant, healthy, and safe summer. Have a good week.